Hello and welcome back to An Abundance of Not. It is March the, what, 4th?
4th.
Garrett here, that's Brad. And
that would be me.
That's Wade.
Hello.
And we want to give a shout out to our growing fan base. We're glad you're with us, and hopefully you learned something new today. I probably will. I usually
And hopefully
do.
It continues to grow.
That's
Make sure
right.
you share us with your friends. We like friends.
Or enemies or fan bases you know. Themselves. We don't really care who you
Family.
Share us with. Hit share and write something like, can you believe these idiots? I mean, that's fine too.
Yeah, we're, you know, our feelings are very difficult to hurt.
We
so
got thick skin.
We don't even have to read it.
And now that we've begged hopelessly for your, efforts, on with the show. So how are you guys doing?
Doing well.
Yeah?
Whoa.
Easy, Vader.
Yeah. Sorry. It's it's a two-city week for me this week, so I started off in Eastern Ohio, and now I'm over in New Jersey.
And how is that going?
You know, it's New Jersey.
I was almost expecting...
To our New Jersey fans, I apologize.
I was almost expecting to be like, yeah, I'm doing the podcast on the plane in the bathroom.
Yeah, yeah.
The stewardess is knocking on the door, and I am not leaving.
Occupy.
I think I
Occupy.
Almost set off the smoke detector. Hold on.
What is it in Spanish? Ocupado. No hablo inglés. That'd be funny. So you're, what is Eastern Ohio? Now you're in New Jersey. And is
yes.
that where you'll stay until Friday?
That is the plan.
We all know how well everything goes according to plan.
Yeah, very rarely.
Yeah. Speaking of plans, we had a major plan in the home office. For those of our new listeners, Brad and I work for the same real life company, which is how this came to be. Anyway, we had Kaiser Permanente in the building today
Ooh.
Of about 20 to 30 people.
Wow.
Kind of assessing who we are and how well we do things to hopefully earn their business. And that would be a great business to earn. However, not however, but as a slight caveat, it was mandatory that the home office be slightly more presentable than the standard jeans and more than, you know, t-shirt attire.
You actually had to get dressed today.
I did. I had to wear big boy pants and a tie, which is
depressing
been quite
a while. Wow, a tie.
A tie. It only took me 7 minutes tying it this morning, too. So I was impressed.
When was the last time you tied a tie?
Actually, not that long ago, because my daughter had a formal father-daughter Girl Scout dance thing.
Right. I didn't realize you wore a tie for that. How fancy of you.
Well, dude, I gotta
Did you get
apart.
It on the first try?
No.
Okay.
But
Ooh.
I have a caveat. I like that word, by the way. I was trying a different tie knot. So instead of a standard Windsor or double Windsor, I was trying, today I did a tie knot that's called the Trinity knot. And it's kind of cool that in the center of what the knot normally is, it's three pieces that overlap and weave into each other. So it's kind of cool, a little bit different, but subtle. And I thought that was kind of fun. When I tried to do one with my daughter for her dance thing, I tried what's called a Heldridge knot that is a little bit more complex, and it didn't go well.
This episode of An Abundance of Not has been brought to you by the number 7, 3, and the word caveat.
And tie tying procedures.
And Men's Warehouse, where you get quality ties.
You like this tie, or your mattress is free. Wait, that's something else. So yeah, that was a big thing today. Nothing much to talk about over the weekend, this past weekend. Aside from having to work Saturday because of being the end of our fiscal year at the office and a very strong push from sales to hit a abstract number. So that's fun.
Completely made up by them.
By them. That they
told everybody gets held to. Yes.
That they told Japan that we would hit, and now we have to hit it. Otherwise, uh-oh.
Yeah, I know. We've got the same issue.
Yeah. Yeah, because you guys have to implement.
We have to put the stuff in that you're designing.
Exactly, sucker.
This arbitrary number.
Yeah.
Sot A goes into port B.
Yeah, except we forgot to order part B.
Yeah, that happens.
Yeah, jeez.
Luckily, I don't do that anymore, so hee hee. Yet everyone calls me when they're missing stuff, so I don't know what that's about. I'm going to start changing that.
Just forward your number to the CEO's desk.
Well, that guy doesn't speak English very well yet. That's not changing until next month.
April, but, yes. Yeah. So our weekend was fairly laid back. Saturday, I think it was, we found a new car store in town. Well, it's not new. It's just new to us.
You say car store, you mean?
I mean a automobile store. Not a dealer. Well, I suppose technically they're a dealer, but not a dealer in the traditional sense.
Okay.
This is not your Ford, Lincoln, Mercury dealer.
Tesla.
No, unfortunately not. But more, that actually closer. So I don't know how this happened, but this one car store in Fort Wayne managed to get hold of one of the prototypes of a McLaren P1.
Ooh.
Yeah. So it's open to the public. Obviously, you can't sit in it or touch it or breathe on it. But it's a car store for exotic cars. So they had some Saline, Mustangs, Camaros.
Oh, okay.
In fact, I didn't know that he did anything other than Mustangs, but apparently they have a Camaro and a something else, Challenger maybe? I don't remember.
That'd be surprising, but it's possible.
And, you know, Aston Martin.
Aston Martins.
There were some Lamborghinis, a couple Ferraris. For the cheapskates in the group, they had some Porsches.
Yep. Okay, so here's the question.
Ready? Yes.
This goes to all three of us.
Uh-oh.
You walk up to a desk. On the desk, there's three car keys. One's a Lamborghini. Let's say it's a Gallardo. One is an Aston Martin of equal value. And one is a Ferrari of equal value. The key you select is the car that you get. Which key do you grab? Wade.
I have no freaking idea which one Enemy of Mars. So I
see, Wade's not a car person. Brad.
For a Gallardo, I'd probably pick the Aston Martin.
To me, it was never a decision. It was always going to be Aston Martin. However, yeah. My big pet peeve with the Gallardo is that they don't have Lamborghini scissor doors.
Correct, they do not.
So you have to take your Lamborghini to the to a body shop and say, hey, can you put those Lamborghini scissor doors on my Lamborghini? Because I was too cheap to buy the model that actually comes with those.
Meanwhile, the McLaren P1 does have gullwing doors.
Yeah, although that's, what, a $1.5 million car or something?
Something like that, yeah.
Potentially.
Yeah. And it was really interesting, too. They had the driver's door open. Like I said, it's a gullwing door, so the, well, I suppose you could call it the trunk. So the trunk and the hood release are actually on the bottom of the door.
Okay.
So, you know, as you lift the door open, you know, it's facing you as you're standing facing the door.
Nice.
It's actually, it's one of those things that when you think about it, it's duh. That, where else would you put it? That makes sense. But, you know, until you see it, you don't actually think of a trunk release being on the bottom of the door.
This is true. Mm-hmm. So on the price point, it looks like the standard price for the McLaren P1 will be at around $815,000. However, according to McLaren, 75% of the P1 customers have opted for some level of unique design from McLaren's special operators, or operations rather, raising the average price of the P1 to roughly $1.6 million each.
Pocket change.
It's on average. I mean,
for somebody.
I've got one on pre-order.
Yeah.
Oh, awesome.
I mean, that's as far as it'll get, but it's on pre-order.
Mine's in blue.
No, I'm pretty sure you have to put down a couple hundred thousand just to pre-order it.
So, yeah, I mean, 100 grand just to pre-order. I doubt that it's that cheap.
Yeah, probably not. I'm sure it's several hundred grand.
Yeah, sure, it's probably 50% of purchase price. Just in case you back out.
Right.
I mean, I know Mercedes did that with their McLaren SLR where you had to own a Maybach first, and those are like 800 grand. And those who don't know what a Maybach is, it was in the third Transformers movie with Leonard Nimoy, rest in peace, that Shia LaBeouf and what's the main guy, former Simmons, Agent Simmons, were riding in. Anyway, that's a Maybach. Big, long sedan. They're cool. But yeah, cars, awesome.
Yay.
Yay. Mm-hmm.
And then Sunday we got snowed in. And
and Sunday there's just a bunch of white stuff.
That's right. 6 inches of snow Sunday.
Hey, we had rain, so I mean, that's still a thing.
We had hail, actually.
That wasn't there for that.
I was. Here.
Wade had hail.
Just because you weren't there doesn't mean it didn't happen.
Pretty much does, actually.
The world does not actually revolve around you. Wade, how was your weekend?
Please do tell.
I think it was pretty uneventful, but luckily for me, this weekend will be pretty nice. I did spend my last day dishwashing today, so I will be moving into the prep cook position.
Partay.
When I get back on Sunday, I get a 3-day weekend.
Congratulations.
Just so happens because they want to switch my position on Friday, where I have my first position dishwashing is Thursday, Friday, yet my prep cook position, my days off are Friday, Saturday. So I'm going to sit and relax.
3-day weekend.
Always
can't
nice.
Complain.
Oh no, I can't.
I mean, you could, but
it won't get me anywhere.
We
won't listen. So on to movies.
Exactly. On to movies.
Screw you, dude.
that was pretty rude, but also really funny. So in the movies this week, we have I think 5 coming out. Number 1 was highly anticipated by me, but kind of a downer from the critics. Chappie. This is critic rated at 20%. Rated R, featuring Hugh Jackman, Charlton Copley, who you might know from District 9, The A-Team, Elysium, and he had a few other things in there too. And Sigourney Weaver, along with Dev Patel, who was in Slumdog Millionaire and also known for the Best Exotic Marigold Hotel. In Chappie is based in the near future, where crime is patrolled by an oppressive mechanized police force, but now the people are fighting back when one police droid, Chappie, is stolen and given new programming. He becomes the first robot to be able to think and feel for himself. As a powerful, destructive force starts to see Chappie as a danger to mankind and order, they stop at nothing to maintain the status quo and ensure that Chappie is the last of his kind. This is done by the same people who did District 9 and Elysium, so still got that same feel about it.
That gritty, dirty feel.
Yeah, but I mean, I really like the believability these movies had, and even at 20%, I am going to try to see this because this is right down my alley. Believable science fiction.
To say Sigourney Weaver has really kind of thrown herself back into sci-fi. She's going to be in the second Avatar. Apparently they're doing another Aliens movie. She's going to be a part of that.
Well, not to mention the Aliens video game they just did. She did a voiceover deal for, the DLC for that? Pretty sure.
And now she's in Chappie, so... Wow.
Yeah, I mean, she's getting
working
back
hard.
Getting back on the other side of the camera or in front of the camera, period. So that's number 1. Number 2 coming out this week is Unfinished Business, also rated 20%. This is additionally, it's rated R, same as Chappie. This is a Vince Vaughn movie with Dave Franco, who you might recognize from 21st and 22nd Jump Street, along with Superbad. The plot is a hardworking small business owner and his two associates travel to Europe to close the most important deal of their lives. But what began as a routine business trip goes off the rails in every imaginable and unimaginable way, including an unplanned stops at a massive sex fetish event, and a global economic summit. So there's the thing.
Why does this sound like that one movie where a bunch of guys just get drugged in Vegas?
Hangover?
Yeah.
I doubt it. This has a feeling maybe kind of like Old Dogs, if you saw that, with Robin Williams and John Travolta, where they're trying to close a big business deal and it kind of goes awry and they somehow save it. Another Vince Vaughn movie, and they can be fun. I like The Internship. I don't know if... Wait, I'm pretty sure you saw The Internship.
I've seen it. It was pretty good.
I don't know if you got the chance to.
No.
You're not a big Vince Vaughn fan, though, are you?
No, not really.
That's fair.
I could take it or leave it.
That's fair. Kind of playing a cyclical role here. Number three this week is the second best exotic Marigold Hotel. This is rated at 73%. It is PG, featuring Dev Patel, as we saw in Chappie, Bill Nye, no, not the science guy, Maggie Smith, and Judi Dench. The best exotic Marigold Hotel is full up of its long-term residents. Co-managers Muriel and Sonny have a dream of expansion, and they've found just the place, the second best exotic Marigold Hotel. With plans underway, Evelyn and Douglas venture into the Jaipur workplace, wondering where their regular breakfast dates will lead. Meanwhile, Norman and Carol navigate the swirling waters of an exclusive relationship as Madge juggles two very eligible suitors and the recent arrival of Guy Chambers finds a muse in Sonny's mother. There's a lot of names here. If you saw the first movie, they might make more sense, but if you don't, then it's just a lot of names. Sonny finds the expansion plans takes more time than he has available, leading up to his wedding also. As the big day approaches, everyone gets wrapped up in the festivities of an Indian marriage. I did see the first movie, quite the cast. As you can see here, the first one was even more so. It was really very well done and very enjoyable. Not necessarily my first choice in movie themes. But it was well done, and I think it did pretty well at the award ceremonies, and the critics liked this one at 73%. They're not in love with it, but that's fine. Next on the list, what, number four, I believe, is These Final Hours. This is 84%, is currently unrated. In this apocalyptic drama, James is a troubled young man on a mission. He's desperate to join his girlfriend Vicky at, quote, the party to end all parties and numb any feelings of the world as the world comes to an end. On his journey, however, James is greeted by a lawless and chaotic city facing a cataclysmic event that will end life on the planet. And he discovers that getting to where he needs to be will not be easy. Along the way, he saves the life of a young girl named Rose, frantically searching for her father. Out of options, James invites Rose to join him. Together, they discover how they would truly like to spend their last moments on Earth and as this world goes mad. Again, 84%. No actors really there that I recognized. I'm not sure if this is going to be another limited release like we typically see with some of these either low budget or kind of unknown casts that we normally see. Lastly, I love this title, Merchants of Doubt, 79% from the critics. This is PG-13, again, either a foreign movie or a generally unknown cast. Inspired by the acclaimed book by Naomi Oreskes and Eric Conway, Merchants of Doubt takes the audience on a satirical comedy, but is also an illuminating ride into the heart of conjuring American spin. Now, I read that and I wrote that and I wondered, what are you talking about? Well, it evolves. A secretive group of highly charismatic, silver-tongued pundits for hire who present themselves in the media as scientific authorities, yet have the contrary aim of spreading maximum confusion about well-studied political threats ranging from toxic chemicals to pharmaceuticals to climate change. So that sounds hilarious.
It sounds
to
just
me.
Like a sure. You get
a whacked out quote unquote scientific authority telling you the exact opposite of what you thought you knew and trying to convince you that what you know is in fact wrong when it's actually right.
It's a group of scientific trolls.
That's fake scientific trolls. It could be really, really funny. Moving on to the box office, we have Focus. This was the Will Smith movie. Pulls in $18.7 million. Kingsman, The Secret Service, pulls in $11.9 million. The SpongeBob movie pulls in $10.8 million. And 50 Shades of Grey, number 4, at $10.6 million. So that's it for movies. And anybody have any additions, hopes that they'd like to see?
Nope.
Nope.
Pretty dry on the movie front.
Yeah, a little bit. Now, I did see a movie.
Maybe The Lazarus Effect.
A Fault in Our Stars? I think that's a different one. Let me see here.
The one from Divergent?
Real quickly.
Yeah,
sure. It is. The Fault in Our Stars is a movie. I think we talked about it when it came out. It's with the main girl from Divergent where she is stricken with cancer. It was a heartwarming and kind of awakening movie. And I'd recommend it to a lot of people. It deals with the fact of a lot of people who are young people that are dealing with illness have the Make-A-Wish Foundation who are there to kind of give them that opportunity to do something. It jokingly points to the fact that she went to Disneyland, used her wish to go to Disney World or whatever at 13, whereas a boy that she meets who is also a survivor saved his for something that might be more grand. Willem Dafoe is also in this, if you're a fan of him. I always find it funny where he pops up in movies. But yeah, it kind of a heart wrencher, a little bit of a tearjerker if you're of an emotional state of mind. But I thought it was really well done and kind of eye-opening. If you're a True Blood fan, you'll recognize the dad. He was in that. And the mom was in Jurassic Park. So it was a pretty decent cast overall. Anyway.
Cool.
With that, I think we'll jump into the news.
Hot off the presses, this week in device news, Chinese device manufacturer Xiaomi announces that they will be releasing a action camera to go head-to-head against the GoPro, at least in the Chinese market. There's no word of bringing it to the U.S. market yet, but if it does well, we may well see it, and I hope we do. So, comparing spec to spec here, the $130 GoPro Hero can shoot 1080p at 30 frames or 720p at 60 frames.
Correct.
The Xiaomi Yi has a 16 megapixel camera capable of shooting 1080p at 60 frames per second and costs $60.
Wow.
Sorry, 64.
Okay.
Depending on exchange rate.
Depending on the day, right?
Yeah, you know.
So, I mean, is that just the two primary specs, though? It's a 16 megapixel camera and shoots 1080p at 60?
That's the primary ones, yeah. It has 64 gig of built-in storage, which is supposedly twice of the Hero.
Yeah, I'm not sure what the Hero is, because the Hero was just released this past year as an entry-level version. To offer people a cheaper option than the Hero 4 silver, white, silver, and black models.
Which go up to, what, $400 or $500?
I think maybe four, possibly five.
Yeah.
I have a Hero 3 silver edition, which is two generations old. They've since had, obviously, the Hero 4, and there was a Hero 3 Plus. It has similar specs as that Hero version now. Although I don't think it has any internal storage. I think it's all based on SD card.
Okay. Well, like the GoPro, the Yi will be usable up to 40 meters underwater.
Yep.
In a rugged you know, has a rugged case and will have a smartphone app just like GoPro does to be able to remotely control the camera.
I would like to point out that those apps don't work when the camera's underwater.
Well, it would require having the phone underwater as well.
Yeah, the water has a fun little prevention. Now, GoPro does sell a...
It attenuates the signal really, really well.
Really, really hard.
Yeah.
GoPro does sell a wireless remote that does come in a waterproof case, so for the surfers and whatnot out there. But I do believe that that is not so great underwater. You can take it underwater. I just don't think it'll communicate all that well.
Xiaomi is also promising a wide range of accessories and attachments for helmets, bikes, pets, you know, the standard GoPro stuff.
Sure.
So it should be interesting. Like I said, this is being released in China, Xiaomi's home country. There is no word on whether we will
import them themselves.
What's that?
Until someone buys a bunch and imports them into the U.S. on their own.
Well, that's always the possibility, you know, with the internet making stuff global. But it should be interesting to see how this does, and if they end up bringing it to the U.S. market, how, you know, when you sit down and think about it, really objectively look at it, GoPro doesn't actually do anything special. It's a commodity.
Yeah.
It's, you know, it's a camera in a rugged case with a bunch of accessories that are really cool, but it's not anything special. Anybody can do it with commodity parts. So, you know, I'm excited to see as this market moves forward and maybe Xiaomi can bring some pressure on. I know Polaroid has one.
Sony has one as well.
Sony has one. You know, it's becoming, Ion is another one. It's becoming a commodity thing, and I think that's a good thing. You know, like I said, it's component parts pieced together. If the price comes down, there's not really any reason why GoPro costs $400, except they have celebrity sponsorships, which, you know, admittedly get them market share. You know, they're well known. If you're doing rugged camera work, it's probably a GoPro, or if you're using something else, it kind of like when you vacuum, you know, a lot of people Hoover.
Yep.
When you copy something, a lot of people Xerox. You know.
When you blow your nose, a lot of people use a Kleenex.
Yeah. So GoPro may end up being the generic name for all of these, which is a pro and a con for them.
Definitely. But, it's interesting, you know, though, watching movies, and if you're aware, like I've only recently been, that you can start to see shots that they either use a GoPro style camera on, based on, you know, what's fixed in the frame and what's moving around. Sure. I've seen people, you know, running down the stairs. I think I saw a Criminal Minds episode the other night where somebody fell down the stairs and they stayed perfectly in their spot in the frame. So you knew that they had to have some sort of a camera apparatus based on them and a small camera to capture that.
Sure.
And every time I see it, I think, oh, GoPro. Maybe they're using a Sony, maybe they're using whatever, but it's that style of shot.
Well, and as the price comes down and becomes more accessible, you know, maybe we'll get more and better videos. And it begins to open up, you know, multi-angle photography.
Yeah.
I mean, think about it. If obviously you were prepared to drop $200 on your camera, whatever it was, ballpark.
Sure. Yep.
You know, if they were commodity priced at, you know, $50, well, then maybe you'd get four cameras and mount them in different angles and you could do more interesting shots.
Of course. There's some videos online where people got like 150 GoPros. They synced them up and they did what they call bullet cam. You see this in The Matrix where you've
bullet time.
Yeah, bullet time, where they have cameras all around the shot and like and they show you and they kind of freeze the frame and they show you all the way around, like a 360 shot. That's called bullet cam. You've seen The Matrix.
Didn't a research group did it for sharks as well?
They probably, yeah, they created a GoPro
ring mount
rig that was multiple shots where they did it with shark biting bait on Shark Week. Yeah. And they showed the shark bite from like, I don't know, it was like 140 degrees of different, you know, of angle.
That's cool.
It's very true. And the different angles can add a lot more opportunity for shooting. But one thing that a lot of people don't talk about with cameras like this, Filming it's one thing.
Editing it sucks.
Editing the video is a totally different story. I have hours of GoPro footage. I don't know how to edit it in a cohesive, smooth fashion that make those videos worthwhile to watch. I have the ability, but I don't have the logic. Well,
there's a reason why, as the term goes, the cutting room floor. There's a reason why even commercially, professionally, shot by professional cinematographers, why so much of their film ends up on the cutting room floor.
Yeah.
You know?
But it's a matter of organizing the clips and only keeping what you really need to show.
Absolutely.
And being willing to part with the rest of it.
Yep.
So a word to the wise, though, out there for people who are thinking about getting into it, be sure you have the time to edit whatever you think you want to share, because it takes time.
We do stuff on YouTube, and I'm like kind of finding it difficult to get, you know, onto the track of I need to get a couple things edited. And once I have that done, I have a system built for it, but it's just sitting down doing it. It takes so much time.
Absolutely.
Well, continuing on that from cinematography, my apologies, we're moving into the creation of video games.
Woohoo!
Yes, actually, if you ever wanted to make a video game, now is the best time. As Epic Games, the developer that was first created by Cliff Lubinsky, they created the Gears of War series, has offered their Unreal 4 game engine for free.
Sweet.
Zero. Nada. You do not pay a thing to download this product.
This is open for everybody, nice. Not this just developers?
Everyone.
Wow.
Now, for the record, for our listeners, I was about to say viewers. If you're viewing this, you're watching the wrong thing.
We do have a YouTube feed for this.
For our listeners, this is the engine. So this is not a game to play. This is the back end that allows you to create your games.
That's correct.
This is the thing that does the games.
Yep, and on their blog, Epic Games has stated that this software can be used for, obviously, game development, education, architecture, VR, film, and animation. So pretty much you can do quite a bit with this software.
That's awesome.
Yep. The only caveat they have is that they will take a 5% royalty after the first $3,000 per product per quarter.
I knew there had to be a catch somewhere.
Yeah, there's the catch for the software.
Okay, but what percentage did you say it was?
5% royalty on the first $3,000.
On or after?
After.
After, sorry.
Yeah. You know, all things considered, that's not that bad.
No, it's really not.
So they're giving it to you for free to develop, so there's no upfront costs for you. You get the first $3,000 every quarter without royalties. And then after that $3,000, they take 5%. So they're not expecting any money from you until you're actually successful.
Pretty much.
And
you know?
Kind of thinking, how big is this for indie devs?
Yeah, that's awesome.
Here's my only question, though. If it's why not?
Because I said so. Oh. Enough said.
Now, how do they manage this? I mean, if anyone can log into the website and download it, and I'm assuming it, I don't know if you have to log into it or not. How does Epic keep track of every game that's created in order to go after their 5% after X amount of revenue?
My guess is, well, here, read the fine print. My guess is it's part of the end user license agreement, and if you don't send them their 5%, you will be getting a phone call from their lawyers.
They first have a subscription. I think it's like $19 a month, which obviously means you'd have to like log in and put in your payment. But for the one, the free, they probably still have you put in, you know, have a login account for it, which I think would be the easiest way for them to do it.
Yeah.
It'll at least allow them to keep track of who downloads it, but it's you're not forcing people to download it to register the game that they're creating or anything like that. So you either have to have a team that monitors published games to see if they're actually using that engine or not, because I'm sure there's ways to tell and go from there. I'm worried about, you know, I'm concerned about the business loopholes.
Well, I'm wondering if it's one of those things, and I'm speculating here. I don't know the answer for sure, but, you know, the engine could phone home. So you create a game, and every time that game gets launched, it contacts Epic servers and, you know, authorizes. Well, now they've got tracks on how many games are made and how many copies are played, and they can look it up and go, you know, okay. Based on how many different people we've seen log in, you've probably made,
you know, time to cuff up. X, Y, or Z. Yeah. Interesting concept. I'd be curious to figure it out, but it might be one of those ongoing mysteries.
Those caveats. You think the guys who've been working with this engine for so long probably like, that's our shade right here.
Yeah.
There's gotta be something within the product that is identifiable. Anyway.
If you want to take advantage of this, please, please, please read the license agreement.
Yeah.
Yeah. Don't just click accept.
Make sure these are legally binding documents.
What was that thing? Oh, it's the devil. And I have your soul. How do you have your soul? You remember those licensing agreements?
Exactly.
Have you read them? Nope. Gotcha.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Well, moving on to the hero of our story, potentially. We always talk about competition in industries, obviously benefit us, the end user. And one of the industries that we all are victim to is the cell phone industry. We're stuck with more or less the big three. Yeah, there's Metro PCS and there's, you know, some of these other ones. But for the most part, it's Sprint, AT&T, and Verizon.
For the U.S. market.
For the U.S. market, yes. What if we had a fourth? And not just, oh great, another cell phone company, but a name you can trust. A name you know is not going anywhere. What if I told you you could have a Google cell network plan?
I think a name you could trust is going a little far.
A name you could trust to be around.
That one I'll grant you.
A name you can trust won't go out of business in 6 months.
So, but a name you can trust with all your personal information.
Well, if you're foolish to think that you can trust anybody else with it, then that's your problem.
Very true.
So Google said Monday at the wireless show in Barcelona, Spain, España,
that it is soon. Mobile World Conference?
That would be the mobile wireless. Could be the Mobile World Conference. The article I read just said wireless show in Barcelona. Okay. So it very well could be that. It will soon to sell data plans for smartphones and tablets in the U.S. market. The announcement confirms leaks and media reports from late January. More info is said to be released in the coming months by Sony's senior VP of products. This obviously mirrors their hard connections that Google has offered in select markets with their high-speed fiber, which we talked about previously, how much it doesn't really cost you and how much speed you get from it. And goes on to say that Google's attempts to seamlessly keep people connected from Wi-Fi to the cellular connection has been a target they've been going after for some time. This will also pair up with their launch of their own Nexus smartphones and potential tablets to not necessarily add competition, but to provide innovations in the mobile hardware world. Google is partnering up with Sprint and T-Mobile and hopes to encourage AT&T and Verizon to better their services and cut their prices. They are also working on a service called Android Pay, obviously similar to Apple's Pay, that will work across all Android devices. So if you're a Google fan and you're sick of AT&T and Verizon, then you have yet another option.
So this one made me curious.
Yes.
Obviously, Google has the money.
Yes.
Yeah.
But I can't see them rolling out an entirely new cell phone network.
They're not. They're partnering with Sprint and T-Mobile.
Well,
however,
so, yes.
This very well may be a test drive for Google. And if their insertion into the cell phone market is a success, there's a high chance that they just buy Sprint and T-Mobile.
Oh, we did
good. That could be interesting.
It could be.
That could be very interesting.
One could argue the potential of monopolizing by taking two fairly major contenders out of the industry and lumping them into one name.
Although you would FTC. Still have the balance of the other three.
That's true. Other two, technically.
Oh, sorry. Yeah, they would take Sprint.
That's correct. So, yes, there is the potential, if this is successful, that it will just be Google Cellular or whatever they come up with.
And see, that's not the way I thought they would go about it.
Really?
Yeah. You know, there's the opportunity. I mean, you can license spectrum in bulk from the big names.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, you know, your Metro PCS, your Virgin, your Net 10, they don't have their own towers. They license airtime from the others.
Correct.
So, you know, there was a real opportunity here for Google to bulk license time from Verizon and AT&T to build a phone with radios for both, which the iPhone has, but you can only enable on one carrier at a time.
Is that because of the carrier or the partnership that they have with the carriers?
That is because the radio operating instructions, for lack of a better word, are incompatible. So you need a SIM card for each network you connect to identify you to that network. Well, the iPhone only has one SIM card, so you can only be on one network at a time.
Sure.
There are phones in the world, mostly in developing nations, that have multiple SIM card slots.
Yep.
You could be on, you know, one carrier's phone plan and on a different carrier's data plan.
I always thought a dual SIM card would be optimal for business and people like yourself who travel and have a company line or a phone that's paid for by the company, to where you could have dual phone numbers in the same device. You could have your personal phone, your personal number, and you could have a work number that you would hand out to customers and coworkers and whatnot. And then when you leave the company, you don't have people calling your private number about a company you don't work for anymore.
That would actually be really great. Another thing where it would be beneficial for me is to have a Verizon and an AT&T SIM card in my phone, because, you know, there's a lot of places in the country where AT&T is great and Verizon sucks, and there's a lot of places where Verizon's awesome and AT&T sucks.
That's correct.
And having and so I really saw this as an opportunity for Google to do that, you know, to have an Android phone with two SIM card slots. They've licensed. You pay Google once, and they've licensed from both AT&T and Verizon, and it just picks the best network, and you get coverage everywhere.
Well, Google's smartphones did say they're looking to introduce innovations in the mobile hardware.
Could be interesting.
There's a big gray question mark floating over that statement.
Mm.
Could be interesting.
What do they have up their sleeves?
It's exciting. You know, I am not in favor of monopolies. I am in favor of pushing innovation forward. You know, obviously I am an Apple fan, but I don't think they have everything right. I don't think they do everything they could do. They do enough to be ahead. And if Google can come up and do something truly innovative and push this forward, that's awesome. Yep. I'm excited.
So keep your eyes peeled for that and see how it goes. Hopefully, I guess I'm kind of mixed here. If it goes well for Google and Google takes over Sprint and T-Mobile, what stops them for hiking their prices to be equivalent to AT&T and Verizon? And now you have truly the big three that there's no variance.
No escape.
With. You know, yeah. So that's one concern.
Absolutely.
The other factor is that we've seen that their prices on the internet with their fiber are, they don't even compare with the services offered elsewhere. They're so much cheaper based on what they're providing that if they take that same logic into the cell phone industry, it could be very beneficial for us, the consumer. So we surprising. Just got to wait and see which side of the coin is face up.
Surprising they're not trying to, like, wire it into their fiber systems.
Building a cell phone network is gnarly.
Well, apparently so is putting down the fiber systems.
That's why.
Yeah, it's so and maybe in the areas where they have fiber deployed, they could do their own towers and hook it into the back end. That would be interesting.
Yeah, I mean, in their areas where they got the fiber, they could potentially have a backdoor into routers that would allow people's cell phones to connect to Wi-Fi stuff or something like that. That would open up that.
It'd be interesting. I hope they really innovate here. They have an opportunity. Let's go.
We'll see what happens.
They said they want to, so let's go.
And like you said, they got the money. So let's see where this takes us.
They definitely have the money. Not, they don't have Apple kind of money, but they have the money.
Yep. All right. So, moving on.
Well, from one innovation to another, this one on the scary side.
Oh, God.
Because apparently that's my job here, is to leave you frightened and afraid.
Can I what go is this, now? 3 weeks in a row now?
Yes.
Fantastic.
Maybe we should make this a permanent feature.
Hooray.
This one is, we're actually covering a 60 Minutes episode that aired a couple weeks ago. The link will be in the show notes. I encourage you all to go and watch the video before you get into our discussion, if you could. If not, spoiler alert, but definitely watch the video because it is eye-opening. So, we have been pushing technology forward at a fairly steady pace, and it's an accepted axiom that security and convenience are on opposite ends of the same spectrum. If something is convenient, it is most likely not secure, and vice versa.
Sure. The whole conversation with civil liberties, do you want your rights or do you want to be safe? You can't have both.
Exactly. So where this has really come into focus, the Defense Advanced Research Projects Agency, DARPA, which is the organization that originally created the internet 50 or so years ago, is a military think tank, for lack of a better word, that pours money into research. I don't know if you've seen the self-driving robots that are supposed to navigate any terrain possible. They do it out in the desert.
I mean, I've seen little things here and there, but I'm not sure if it's what you're talking about.
Okay, DARPA sponsors, you know, they're trying to do autonomous vehicles for military use and this kind of thing. Okay. So they've got their fingers in a lot of things. But anyway, one of the things that they have investigated, and this is what the 60 Minutes episode was covering, is the advancement of technology in our cars.
Okay.
Uh-huh. So cars are computers on wheels nowadays.
Yeah. Yep.
Well, the problem is the network in a car called the car bus that was originally designed back in the 80s or 90s, that kind of time frame, is the same thing that we're using today to network all the computers in the car.
Nice.
And it was never designed to be secure.
Of course not.
Because you had physical security. The car talked to itself and only itself.
Yep. But now we got Chevy cars with Wi-Fi. We've got cars that report back when they need service.
You have sci-fi. Sci-fi. Yeah,
we have that too.
You have Wi-Fi, yeah. The thing that it connects yep. satellite feed, so it tells you your directions. GPS, yes.
And OnStar.
Yes.
Now, I'm not picking on OnStar directly because they are not the only ones that do this, but they are the most widely known. So, you know, kind of like Hoover, Xerox, and Kleenex, we're going to pick on OnStar.
That's fair.
So these cars actually have a cell phone built into them that allow you to call OnStar and for, you know, some of the advanced features that OnStar provides, such as accident reporting, where they actually call you when they detect a wreck and report to the police where you are so you can get help.
Remotely unlock your car.
Help you unlock your car when you've lost your keys. Your car now has a modem. Well, unfortunately, that also opens you up to a whole bunch of other problems that you would expect that come with a computer network connected to the internet. In this 60 Minutes video, it starts off, it's not the full video on the website. It's only about a minute and a half, but it's enough to get the point. So it starts off with some of the cute stuff. The hacker has managed to override the car computer, and he is standing, you know, a couple hundred feet away from the car while the 60 Minutes reporter is driving around. And he does things like activates the windshield wipers and sprays. You know, oh yeah, haha, that's kind of, you know, weird.
Cute, and, annoying, but not necessarily dangerous.
And then blows
driving.
They're driving in a closed environment. You know, it's not
in an open environment if that were to happen.
Yeah. Then they blow the horn. Yeah. Oh, okay. Again, kind of weird, not something you expect. And then they disable the brakes.
Nice.
There's a problem.
Unfortunately, all the systems are interconnected. And once they have gained access to one, they can use that to springboard into others and take over your car.
Yeah.
Definitely check out the video. It is chilling. Spoiler alert, nobody gets hurt.
Darn it.
Yeah, this isn't the world's deadliest hacker situations. This is scary stuff.
Yeah.
Definitely a potential. And the problem is, like we were talking about with the GoPro cameras being commodity parts, automobiles are commodity parts. These computers, you know, they're built by several manufacturers, but, you know, it's not like the Fords have a problem. Well, no, Ford uses the same part that Chrysler uses, that uses the same part, you know, whatever. They all come from common manufacturers, and once these hackers have figured out how to break into it, you know, they have the potential to access hundreds, everything. Thousands, tens of thousands of cars with these exploits.
Yep.
Why am I getting a thought of a sadistic hacker group? It's pretty much out there just to see how many, well, how high they can rack the body count with each.
Some people just
move.
Like to watch the world burn.
Imagine being able to sit on an overpass and you can disable the brakes. I wonder if you can tell the computer to engage the brakes, and you got a car is going at 80 miles an hour and now 30% of them just lock up.
Yeah. Well, see, here's the thing. Most cars nowadays don't have physical interconnects. You know, the days of the brake cable are gone.
Yeah. Or the hydraulic lines. It's all electronic sensor on the foot to a computer system to a pneumatic servo or whatever.
Yes.
Yeah.
So absolutely that's possible. You can tell it to brake. You can tell it to accelerate. You can disable the brakes.
Yeah.
It's really scary. This is the world that we live in.
Yep. We've let advancement and greed block morality and common sense.
They have your computer, they have your phone, and they have your car. They have you.
Yep, pretty much. Well, and
conversation about going off the grid.
Each week it becomes more and more attractive, doesn't it?
It does.
Yeah. Can you stop this, please?
You know, it's one of those things, though. Partially, it's their fault. And partially, it's yours and my fault. We want more and more features. We don't want to pay for them. They have to cut corners somewhere.
I'm actually surprised we haven't heard about this sooner and on a more terroristic level.
There, as far as I know and as far as I could find out, there are no known exploits of this in the wild, although I dare say the NSA has a couple of them.
Oh, wouldn't doubt it.
Yeah, but that's why you haven't heard of it until now. These security researchers are finding it, but there's no known cases of it actually out there. But, you know, it's just a matter of time.
It begs the question, maybe this was the perfect crime and we never heard about it because it was so perfect.
Well, you know, the brakes failed. What can you say?
Exactly.
The brakes failed. How can you
tell? Or locked up.
Yep. How can you tell if it's us? It's we were over here. What do you want?
Exactly. So.
Wow. Well, that just happened.
I'm riding my bike to work now.
Your car. Luckily, all three of our cars don't have GPS, OnStar, anything like that. So I would imagine that we're fairly okay.
You think that. That's a scary point.
I mean, that's the problem is I physically think that.
Well, and the thing is, we don't know. I mean, I didn't realize that they didn't have brake cables anymore. You just kind of assume that, well, you know, there's something physical connecting. No, cars nowadays are all drive-by-wire.
Well, I think some vehicles still do. Like my truck, I can see the master cylinder, and I'm pretty sure if I look, there's linkage. You know, there's not a lot of electronics.
It's not a linkage. It's a fiber optic cable.
No, it's not.
it's a thing. You know, this goes back to when we did the brakes on the Durango.
Yeah.
No idea the rotor was like that, all thrashed up. You know, that was like.
We should have taken a picture and posted that to the page.
Yeah.
That was scary. Anyway.
So, you know, unfortunately on this one, I don't know how to wrap this one up. I don't know how. I mean, it's not like we can actually do anything to affect this except demand change from the auto manufacturers. But, you know, they have a ridiculously long development cycle. I mean, even if they developed a way to secure this, it would be 5 or 10 years before we would see it implemented, and that does nothing for all the cars on the road now.
You're going to have McAfee antivirus for your car, and if you don't update it every 6 months...
Oh, jeez.
They could even before that, I mean, let's be honest, NSA here, they could put stuff on the thing before it ships out. Before the security even goes on to the car.
Sure.
It's like, oh, yeah, the security, it's in there. It just doesn't register this thing that's already on it.
Yep.
Yeah.
So.
And is everyone going to start becoming things? Like, hold on, I got to go plug in my car on my laptop and be like, oh, yeah, that needs to be deleted because that's NSA or whatever.
Well, look, I only buy cars with open source firmware.
Yeah. What happens when you have malware on your car?
Isn't that just a sickening thought?
It's pretty bad. And on that sickening thought, we're going to leave our viewers mulling that over for a while. We'd like to say we're sorry for leaving you on that note, but I don't think Brad really is. I think he likes it.
Sadist.
No, I enjoy bringing the information. I wish that it wasn't so
ominous.
Yes.
If anything, it's a PSA.
Absolutely. Yeah,
exactly. Well, guys, once again, thanks for listening. Like I said before, I learned something today. And one of those things that I maybe wish I didn't learn.
again. Ignorance is bliss.
Exactly. But to let us know what you thought about this episode and previous episodes on Facebook or Twitter. We are always watching. Thanks for listening. We'll see you next time.
Keep on gaming.
That's a wrap.